19. Live and Let Die. Informer 3838, a second damning report, 2015 to 2016. Perhaps Acting Chief Commissioner Tim Cartwright reads the wrong report before he fronts the media. When the Callum Report's broader findings, but not its contents, are released in February 2015, transparency does not appear to be Cartwright's main consideration. There is no evidence at this stage of any threat to any conviction or any evidence of mistrial. Cartwright claims of a still-secret report that in fact says Gobbo's use is primarily responsible for a grave risk to the administration of justice. Only three copies of the highly confidential Callum Report are handed out at this early stage, but Victoria Police will not be able to hide Callum's findings much longer. Callum's recommendations will be the next crucial step in the chain of events leading inevitably to a royal commission. In cooperating with one of those recommendations, police trigger the next phase in exposing their secret. Justice Murray Callum has gone further than former Chief Commissioner Neil Comrie. He has spoken to witnesses, such as Gobbo's SDU handlers. He has studied more information reports than Comrie and taken a broader line of inquiry. He is also across the longer history. In 2002, as a Supreme Court judge, Callum bailed Tony Mockbell because of the delays caused by corruption charges against some Victoria Police Drug Squad officers. Callum's report is a dense document, intended for legally minded readers, and lacking in the subtext of shock that lifts Comrie's findings off the page. Callum is considered and careful. Like so many elements of the Gobbo tale, the most telling of his findings are buried in the detail. As a starting point, he cites the Victorian Bar Incorporated Practice Rules. A barrister must seek to advance and protect the client's interests to the best of the barrister's skill and diligence, uninfluenced by the barrister's personal view of the client or the client's activities. If these rules were breached, his report notes, it amounts to professional misconduct and perhaps more, the criminal offence of attempting to pervert the course of justice. Callum has read the confidential information reports relating to Gobbo's convicted clients. It's clear to him that Gobbo was not advancing or protecting the interests of these clients, but was influenced by her personal view of them and their activities. Callum points out that most of the information a barrister receives from his or her client is categorised either as falling under legal professional privilege or as confidential. There is also a third category of information that can theoretically be passed on to authorities, information that is subject to criminal activity falling outside the fiduciary relationship. Callum finds that any recognition by the SDU of such categories was, almost without exception, absent. Furthermore, problems arose because Gobbo was allowed to self-interpret the categories of her information. Callum cites an information report relating to Tony Mockbell to prove his point. 3838 advised to speak freely and reassured 3838 reability to speak to handlers regarding all matters, including those matters involving alleged corruption. Callum finds it difficult to accept Victoria Police's claim that they avoided seeking legal advice to ensure Gobbo's informer status was not leaked. Barristers, he argues, keep professional secrets all the time. Gobbo's assistance to police required the assessment of a QC familiar with the subtleties of legal professional privilege. He raises the suggestion that Victoria Police did not seek legal advice because they recognised they would encounter untenable tangles. Had the police sought advice from the Victorian Government Solicitor's Office in 2005, Callum says, the use of Gobbo would have been condemned. Her handler's attempts in 2008 to prevent Gobbo from becoming a witness for the Petra Task Force showed that they knew the legal lines had been smudged. They spoke of a royal commission. The basic reason for not being a witness is because of being an informer for the past 3.5 years and not wanting to be in the witness box as the role as a source may come out, handler's notes reveal. Numerous issues include the source's personal safety, but also include unsound or unsafe convictions because of the source's involvement with witnesses and persons charged. The logical conclusion? Victoria Police knew the legal perils well before they belatedly sought legal advice from barrister Gerard Maguire in 2011. They didn't need lawyers to tell them they were party to a dubious scheme. Kellam reserves an extra large helping of scorn for Gobbo's practice of reviewing the police evidence against her clients so she could check that her involvement had been erased from view. She relished reading the cases against her own clients and pointing out their deficiencies. Kellam finds that police relied on Gobbo to provide tactical information against her clients and to manipulate those clients so they would give evidence. He lists 15 examples from her handler's reports relating to the Mockbells and others, including this. 3838 believes the fact that 3838 assisted a Mockbell crew member to roll over will never come out. It appears that Gobbo's part in police investigations was officially erased, yet police are legally obliged to disclose the details of every investigation to the courts. This includes their use of sources, even if they claim public interest immunity, PII, to cloak these sources' identities. If police fail to provide these details, both the court and the defendant are denied the transparency demanded of a fair trial. Criminal sanctions, from contempt of court to more onerous charges, can apply. It seems that Victoria Police, in erasing their use of Gobbo, may have been guilty of illegal conduct. Regrettably, scrutiny of such disclosure provisions appears to be beyond Kellam's remit. But he has other damning observations to make. He refers to Victoria Police's willful blindness and a serious systemic failure. Graham Ashton, now Chief Commissioner, has told Kellam that police were under considerable pressure. When Gobbo comes on board, that could potentially solve a bunch of murders or prevent others. In an oft-repeated observation, Ashton spoke of Gobbo as a glittering prize that sometimes diverts you from the necessary sense of steps, a forbidden fruit too tempting to ignore. Yet legal professional privilege, LPP, is sacrosanct, a tenet any TV viewer picks up from Law and Order. Breaching LPP can hardly be seen as an overlooked step. It is an affront to basic legal ethics. Legally privileged information obtained by a police informer is extremely unlikely ever to be admissible as evidence in criminal proceedings, Kellam writes, citing the United Kingdom's Covert Human Intelligence Sources Code of Practice. Published by the Home Office in 2002, the code dedicated a chapter to issues of receiving information from lawyers. Where there is any doubt as to the handling and dissemination of information which may be subject to legal professional privilege, advice should be sought from a legal advisor before any further dissemination of the material takes place. He calls Victoria Police's failure to adhere to this principle a significant and avoidable oversight. He says the apparent receipt and utilisation by police of prima facie legally privileged or otherwise confidential information provided by the source had the potential to contaminate the criminal justice system. Citing a High Court judgment, Kellam suggests that if a court is denied the true circumstances of a case, it amounts to an attempt to pervert the course of justice. Kellam states that he did not find that any unlawful behaviour occurred, but he does identify negligence of a high order. Officers' behaviour was improper, though this was mitigated by their lack of supervision. Kellam indicts Victoria Police for Gobbo's perilous position. The serious systemic failure of VicPol in relation to the management of the source is primarily responsible for the grave risk which has now been created for the personal safety of the source, for the good reputation and public confidence in VicPol, and to the administration of justice in the state of Victoria. Kellum's conclusion? He has identified 9 of Gobbo's clients whose convictions are possibly tainted. Gobbo's handling of an early client was a clear and obvious conflict that Gobbo herself identified in mid-2006 in a recorded conversation with her controller, Sandy White. This particular client was the source of her most conflicted feelings. She saw him as a kindred spirit and felt bad about betraying him, though it didn't stop her. According to that client, she incriminated him, told him to plead guilty, compelled him to roll on his associates, then coached him through dozens of statements to be used against those associates. He might never have become a police witness if he had received independent advice. Discount his evidence and the cases against 4 of the other 8 people on Kellum's list, Milad Mokbel, Frank Ahek, Carl Koda, and Mr. Beautiful, are weakened. Tony Mokbel was absent during much of the sting in 2006, busy fleeing to Greece. But Gobbo was sharing defence secrets with police before he was convicted in absentia for cocaine importation. Mokbel thought Gobbo was acting in his interests when he spoke to her from a Greek jail, and she was passing on his thoughts to police. But for all the damning findings in Kellum's report, it is one simple recommendation that will prove to be Victoria Police's undoing. It directs the Chief Commissioner of Police to provide a copy of the report to the Director of Public Prosecutions, John Champion. Champion is about to write another verse in the lengthening chorus of shame being played to Victoria Police. By March 2015, the Lawyer X story has been subjected to multiple suppression orders and driven from the news cycle, despite Herald Sun editor Damon Johnston's efforts to circumvent the legal barriers. Each time the Herald Sun publishes a Lawyer X story, police rush to court to further restrict what the paper is allowed to publish. Now, Victoria Police successfully suppressed the use of the term Lawyer X itself, despite the fact it was Johnston's own invention. The force is relentless in pursuing the paper, and never mind the countless taxpayer dollars. Johnston digs in, but his scope is contracting. As the court orders, the Lawyer X case becomes the police informer scandal, which will become the police corruption scandal, which will become the justice system scandal. Other media pick up the story, but the scarcity of available information hampers efforts to explain its intricacies. For years, Dowsley will wonder at the long silences that punctuate the Lawyer X scandal. It feels as though it's too impenetrable to be pursued. In what Johnston now calls a long, lonely legal fight, police will engage in court battles with the Herald Sun over 15 separate issues. They play the legal version of the kids' game, Whack-a-Mole. When Dowsley writes a July 2016 story about drug baron Rob Karam's appeal ambitions, he assumes, rightly, that Victoria Police will immediately seek to legally suppress the information. Lawyer X has been reduced to barristers at 20 paces, armed with affidavits and billable hours, buzzing about like flies on dung. As Johnston says, it would still be a secret today if it wasn't for Anthony Dowsley, and the company's determination to back him in at great expense and legal risk. He identifies another salient point. Police claims about the dangers to Gobbo lack specificity. They argue environmental dangers. But they put her in there, and she put herself in there. It wasn't us, he says. That was what I had to fall back on. Well, we're just doing our jobs here. He begins writing a newspaper editorial about the course of the fight, not knowing when or if it will be published. For years, he will tinker with the words in quiet moments in his office. Its walls boast framed front-page milestones, which now include the Lawyer X Fight for Truth promise. In an era of immediacy and social media and instant gratification, I don't remember anything else in my career that spans old-school traditional typewriter journalism and instantaneous social media journalism, he says now. You think about everything that went on between 2014 and 2019 when Johnston left the Herald Sun. It wasn't the only thing we were working on, but Christ, it felt like it sometimes. Johnston maintains a civil back-channel relationship with Victoria Police. He uses occasional face-to-face meetings to reiterate his determination to fight the legal threats. He also calls Lawyer X staff planning meetings from time to time, as much to remind staff about his commitment to the long game as to set strategies. Yet there is an unexpected upside to the police crusade to shut down the fight. In Fighting Dowsley's 2016 story about Rob Karam's appeal pursuit, Victoria Police's lawyers take a drastic misstep. Their affidavit refers to an examination of Karam's conviction in the Kellam report, whose findings are still suppressed. It cites Kellam's finding that the use of information provided by a police informer or informers may have compromised the fair trial of criminals, including Rob Karam. Johnston has always been convinced the Herald Sun's stories are correct. Dowsley knows too much, and the police's brutal and swift response has lacked transparency. Now he has written confirmation of the facts from the police themselves, albeit in the course of their attempts to stop him publishing those facts. He scribbles, "Holy shit," on a pink post-it note and sticks it next to the Karam reference. He will revisit his holy shit dossier when police seek charges against the Herald Sun for an alleged breach of court orders in 2017. The dossier is so overloaded by then that the documents threaten to spill from the pile in his office. He believed then what he says today, that Victoria Police Command are protecting their asses and willing to blow millions of dollars of taxpayer funds to do that. That if major criminals are released from jail, it will be entirely the fault of police. I think in Victoria, there is a collective thought that our police are better than Queensland, and we're better than New South Wales, Johnston says. This wasn't corruption with cash in brown paper bags, as it was in Queensland. Potentially, this was corruption at a far grander scale, at a systemic scale, and a far more damaging scale. It contracts to a catchphrase that will drive countless confidential Herald Sun strategy meetings over the months and years before the Lawyer X scandal breaks afresh in December 2018. Did they break the law to end the war? Dowsley suspected Gobbo was planning something when they met in the wine bar in the weeks after his first Lawyer X story broke. In October 2014, she wrote a letter to Chief Commissioner Ken Lay. After receiving a response that was nothing but disingenuous and offensive, she writes another letter to Assistant Commissioner Steve Fontana in June the following year. Taken together, the two letters are a manifesto of jilted pride. Small errors of spelling and syntax suggest they were both typed in a huff, as if the writer were keen to leave her rage on the page. They were not penned as therapy, however. The letters are compelling for what they do not say as much as for what they do. They are intended as weapons. Together, the two letters run to more than 4,200 words, but can be distilled into a single demand. Give me hush money. Gobbo received almost $3 million in 2010, after demanding $20 million. She wants more, lots more, for her pain and suffering. Privately, she says Victoria Police have offered her nothing but broken promises, threats, and bullshit. In her second letter, she writes, "Since the Lawyer X publicity started, it would be fair to say that my mental, emotional, and physical health are in decline, and I feel the impact of this nightmare almost every single day. In addition to my anxiety, fear, severe depression, PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and paranoia, my reputation is gone and I will never be able to work as a lawyer again. I would like you to try to put yourself in my shoes for a moment, to try to comprehend my almost complete disillusionment with the very organisation which assured me as an informer that what I did for police and the detailed information I provided would remain a highly protected secret and would never see the light of day. Now, but for my children and a handful of loyal, supportive friends and family, each day is a nightmare as to what might come out next, or indeed, the consequences for my safety and well-being." She feels trapped. She blames police for putting her life at risk. Her informing was motivated by a hatred of injustice. She did the right thing for the right reasons. She feels no guilt. She's a victim who is now being punished. In her 2014 letter, she claimed the death threats against her from Tony Mockbell, among others, were multiplying. But there's another school of thought on this point. A jailed underworld figure close to Gobbo has been mouthing off. He says he sent her a death threat on her urging. In both her letters, Gobbo seeks credit for shaping the solution to the gangland war. She sets out the cause and effect with the clarity of a student solving a maths equation. "As an informer," she writes in 2015, "there was no topic, criminal, organised crime group or underworld crime that was off limits during the many debriefing sessions that occurred. Her thousands of information reports will help account for her actual value, reliability and work." She has kept count. At least 386 people have been arrested and charged because of her information. In her letter to Fontana, she even provides a top 10 list of her greatest stings. Her help has led to asset and property seizures worth more than $60 million, she tells him, based on figures in a newspaper report. Quantifying the veracity of the claim, gangland seizure estimates vary from $40 million to double that, is impossible. There is no way to measure Gobbo's influence in monetary terms. She now wants her rightful due, she tells Fontana. Until now, all she has received is a Victoria Police pen, she says, conveniently overlooking her $2.88 million payout in 2010. She is proud of her work, but she also seems aware that it may bring disgrace upon herself and Victoria Police. She says that if the police do not compensate her, she will launch legal proceedings. The unsubtle threat lies not in the proceedings themselves, but rather in their public nature. She wrote to Lay in 2014, "I am prepared to meet with you to try to reach a mutually acceptable agreement. I would encourage you to consider this option seriously, because it is in no one's best interests for my role and involvement as an informer, human source, to be detailed in a writ or explored in civil proceedings." Yet this virtually ignores the concerns that explain why documents about the Lawyer X scandal fill rooms. In her 2015 letter, she explains away the ethical knots of her informing in a single sentence. "I maintain that anything told to me or said in my presence about crimes being planned or committed cannot ever fall under the protection of legal professional privilege by a client." She overlooks the reasons why some legal experts think that murderous bastards will walk from jails and some police officers ought to be charged with serious crimes. She ignores the fact that she betrayed clients yet accepted their fees. It's unclear if Fontana or a representative ever replies to this letter. If they do, Gobbo surely finds the response most dissatisfying. Victoria Police do as Kellum has instructed and deliver his report, by hand, to the Director of Public Prosecutions, DPP, John Champion, within a week of its release. Over the next 12 months, Champion reviews 9 cases in which miscarriages of justice have potentially occurred. Champion's confidential report, completed in February 2016, offers a neat encapsulation of the Gobbo conundrum. It appears to me highly likely that on a number of occasions, Gobbo acted improperly in informing against her own clients. It appears highly likely that there were breaches of legal professional privilege and of confidences between the lawyer and the client on multiple occasions over a lengthy period of time. There were, almost certainly, serious conflicts of interest occurring in her actions. The overall circumstances of the role and activity of this person and the associated legal implications may be extremely difficult to unravel. His letter to Chief Commissioner Graham Ashton on the 10th of March 2016 is another smoke bomb for Victoria Police. Champion proposes more than just another damning report. He has examined the cases of the 9 convicted Gobbo clients identified by Kellum, and he wants to tell 7 of them that their trials may have been tainted. His letter says they should be informed expeditiously in notifications known as letters of disclosure. Champion is mindful of the risk to Gobbo. He is not seeking to provide the full Kellum report to the convicted men, but it will be necessary to provide sufficient information in order for those people affected to embark on a rational and informed decision-making process as to what steps they may wish to take from this point onwards. How do Victoria Police respond? That's right. They say no. Deputy Commissioner Shane Patton writes to Champion to say that the risk of death to Gobbo, if her role is disclosed, will rise from possible to almost certain. He advises Champion that disclosure is the wrong way to go. Victoria Police will invoke public interest immunity protections. If Champion wants to challenge this view, he can go to the Supreme Court. Victoria Police have repeatedly battled with the Herald Sun over publishing the Lawyer X story. Now they're seeking to shut down any other forms of revelation on the grounds of protecting police informers. The next battle is looming.